Hey everybody, this is Autoblog podcast producer Eric here. I'm just hopping in quickly at the beginning of the episode to let you know that this episode of the Autoblog podcast is brought to you by the SoFi Daily podcast. Reaching financial independence starts with having the right information. So every weekday morning, SoFi keeps you up to date with important business news and stock market happenings and how they affect your financial life. So get your money right and search for SoFi, that's S-O-F-I, wherever you get your podcasts. On with the show.
Welcome back to the Autoblog podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. Joining me today on the show is Road Test editor Zach Palmer. What's up, man?
Oh, nothing much. Just a bunch of horsepower. Seems like that's what the show's going to be about, I think.
I think we have a little bit of horsepower to talk about. Lots of cool stuff here. So let's jump right in. The news segment is loaded with a lot of FCA stuff in particular right off the top. We're going to talk about the Ram TRX, which I was on vacation last week. I went back and was reading about it, and I was just drooling. I was like, wow, this is very cool. You wrote the story. You went to the backgrounder, actually, the virtual backgrounder. So we're going to break that down. If you're like me and you were on vacation, fishing on a boat, chasing your dog, great. Now you can hear more about it. If you heard it the first time, well, hey, can you know, Zach was the man behind the typewriter here, if you will, the computer. He'll give you some insight into how it all came together. We'll also talk about the Grand Wagoneer. We've seen some teasers on that. I think people are really excited about that. I know I am. I think this segment is ripe for a new entry, specifically from FCA. I think specifically from Jeep. I feel like what General Motors and Ford are doing, really nice vehicles right now. You should check out some of the like the stories Joel Stocksdale did on the Tahoe. We're going to have one coming up on the Yukon and, of course, the Ford Expedition. But I think this is a segment that really is ripe for something new, something different, and a Jeep taste is going to be cool. We're getting some spy shots of a BMW M8 Mule rolling around. We got to figure out what that is. There's even some news today on just more on what is going on there. And then Dallage is back, which Zach and I are both fans of Concours. We like those old car shows. We like checking out the brands from like that are long gone. I'm not talking like Oldsmobile or like Pontiac. Dallage has been gone for quite some time. This is a brand that, you know, first became like popular, if you will, like before World War I. And then, you know, if you see a Dallage at Pebble or, you know, one of the Concours somewhere else, like Hilton Head or something, usually it's pretty old. So I think we can both kind of geek out over that. We'll talk about what we've been driving. Lincoln Navigator, Mercedes AMG C63S Coupe. I've actually been in the GLC 43. We'll probably save most of the drive impressions on that, but we are going to kind of differentiate all of the different flavors of AMG. So that's the rundown for the show, and we do have a cool update from Ivor on spending his money. That's from episode 637. You got to stick around. I want to tease that out because it's pretty cool. All right, what is pretty cool is the Ram TRX. 702 horsepower. This is the mighty Hellcat engine under the hood of a Ram. Zach, I want you to break this down for us. But one thing that struck me right off the top when I heard that it was going to be the Hellcat engine under the hood is it just makes so much sense. Like when you go back to some of those Rams that had like V10s in them, it just all that horsepower under the hood of such a capable big vehicle. This to me was actually a no-brainer. So give me your take on this.
Yeah, man. It makes a ton of sense, actually. Seems as though FCA is just, you know, chucking that big 700-plus horsepower Hellcat engine into everything these days. Obviously, we saw it in the Durango. We saw that Durango Hellcat not too long ago, and now it's in the Ram 1500, which, yeah, of course, why not? You know, the name, it makes a lot of sense right off the top. TRX, if you say it fast, sounds like T-Rex, which is a larger predatory dinosaur than the Raptor ever was. So you can see what Dodge FCA was going for with that one. But no, like this truck is obviously meant to you know, go toe-to-toe with the Raptor. And from an off-road perspective, you know, frame, suspension, pretty much everything that you might want to do when you're desert running, you know, they line up toe-to-toe. And when you look at specs, the suspension travel, this thing is extremely capable and right about on board with the Raptor. Now, where things obviously differentiate is with that engine. The Raptor right now, it has 450 horsepower, only 450 horsepower, whereas this has 702. So, you know, you have a ton more power with this TRX. However, it also costs a lot more money. The cheapest that you're going to get into a TRX is in the $70,000 range, and you can actually build one. I did this upwards of $100,000. You will not be able to get any F-150 Raptor for that kind of money. They start in the 50s, and you can go into the 60s and even into the 70s with a fully loaded one, but this Ram TRX is expensive. But you're getting a lot of performance for your money. You know, they developed close to a new frame. They say it's about 75% different than a normal Ram 1500. That is to be able to run across the desert 100 miles per hour plus and jump. FCA bragged about this truck's ability to jump for longer and take on more intense maneuvers than the Raptor. You know, obviously, we will see how that ends up on YouTube eventually, I'm guessing. But, you know, like they basically built it to look meaner, you know, make it everything that could possibly take it over the Raptor. And you can see, like, they made it 8 inches wider than a normal Ram 1500. The thing is menacing, just absolutely a huge and mean looking truck, in every way. And I guess I should probably mention the, 0-60 time as well. 4.5 seconds in a truck. That's just absolutely mind boggling to me that, a truck this large, this heavy, they actually still haven't told us the weight of this thing yet, but it's going to be enormously heavy. It can get to 60 that quickly. But yeah, no, that's it. You know, from a sky view, I'm obviously super, super excited about this thing. I mean, you combine the awesome interior of the Ram, which I think is probably best in segment right now, with all of the off-road goodies like the Bilstein shocks that they put on here, very similar to the Fox adaptive shocks that Ford uses for the Raptor. And you get all that stuff together. It obviously costs a lot of money, but no, this is right now the best off-road truck, I think, on paper, until Ford comes up with the next Raptor, which probably isn't going to be that long because the 2021 F-150 is new this year. And they say the Raptor information is coming soon. So we probably don't have to wait long for Ford's answer to this. We'll see how much they knew of Ram, if they were preparing to take on a 700-plus horsepower truck or not. So, yeah. Any other thoughts from you, Greg?
Yeah, well, I mean, what really strikes me is just the improvements to the frame. You mentioned like 3/4, 75% of it, like, you know, all new or redone. That's really interesting. You don't see that a lot in the, you know, the truck segment, you know, those frames, the underpinnings, you know, even for the special models, you know, they don't tend to really dramatically redo these things all that much. So I think that's impressive. The horsepower figure is cool. Just to have that like gaudy 700 plus output. It's interesting because it's, you know, almost, you know, it's so much ahead of the Raptor right now. But it's also what I find interesting about this segment is raw horsepower isn't 100% necessity. Like the Raptor, nobody says the Raptor doesn't have enough power. You know, when you think about what you're going to do with these things, you don't need a crazy amount of horsepower. You just need like a lot of horsepower, if you will. So I think it's interesting that, you know, just under the hood, they appear to have totally one-upped Ford for the moment. It really makes me curious what they're going to do with the Raptor. If it were my guess, I'd kind of think they might, I mean, they could obviously do two things, flip a coin. They'll get it somewhere to around like 650, you know, something like that. And then just say, we don't need those extra horsepower. It's just vanity. We don't need to do it. Or they're going to do like 705 horsepower or six or something to get one ahead. I don't care. I would rather just make, you know, the next Raptor as good as it's going to be. Can't wait for this comparison test. That is going to be that would be fun. You know, mask up, put on a lot of sanitizer, and, you know, I think that would be a fun one.
No kidding. No, we'd have to go go find a desert somewhere in California for that one, I feel. There isn't much in Michigan. I'm sure anybody listening to this in Michigan knows that there's not a lot of places you can take these trucks to actually enjoy them around here. Maybe some sand dunes, actually.
Sand dunes would be fun. Although the sand dunes around here, I mean, they're quite large and, like, you know, steep and, like, you know, it's there's some incline there. I think this is also a pretty good move by FCA from just a marketing standpoint to, they sort of let the smoke clear for the Bronco, and then, but they're not letting the Bronco just own the spotlight. They're like, hey, by the way, here's this awesome truck. Boom. You know, like, I love to see sort of like those, you know, the old big three Detroit rivalries. And I think this is a very smart move to come on, like, sort of just after the Bronco is starting to maybe hit that glide path as far as promotions. We don't have any new news on it for a few weeks now. And then, boom, FCA jumps in and, like, you know, all we were talking about last week was this amazing truck. So I think that was a smart move.
It's honestly perfect timing for him. Like, Ford threw that huge punch with the Bronco, you know, knocked Wrangler back on their feet for a short amount of time. And now, boom, now FCA gets their own punch in on the Raptor and say it's better than the Raptor in this way, that way, and this way too. And yeah, let the big truck wars continue. I'm having a lot of fun watching it.
Yeah, and I can't wait to drive these things. That's going to be, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's been a while since I have driven a Raptor. This was probably 2 years ago. I took my dog to the vet in a Raptor, which is funny, but we thought she had a Christmas ornament. She didn't. But we took her there, and funny story, the vet is like, they're like curb, if you will. Their sidewalk is very close to the door. So, like, I pull up and, like, the Raptor's got all the lights on, you know, it's late in the year. It's like, you know, obviously around Christmas, like, flood the vet's office with all these, like, all the off-road lights. And they're like, what is this guy doing here? Like, hey, I think my dog's here already. I'm here to pick her up. Like, yeah, she's fine. But what's going on here? what's your truck there, sir? Did you have to park there? So it was kind of funny.
No, you always make an entrance with the Raptor. And they actually did the same thing with the TRX. It has the marker lights that you normally find on the roof of a heavy duty. It actually has them in the hood scoop of the TRX, and also in between the rear bumper and tailgate. So there is no shortage of lights to light up your local veterinarian's office in this truck either. So they've matched the Raptor with the intensity.
It's funny how certain cars stick with you for certain things. I took my dog to the vet once in the long-term Jaguar F-Pace we had. That got some attention. I don't know. Enough of that. But it's just funny how little moments in life, you're like, oh, I was driving that car for this thing, you know? Or like, oh, I drove the Regal GS for Christmas 2010 or 12 or something. I digress. Let's talk about the Grand Wagoneer, which is future product. 2022 model year. It's coming. They've teased it out now. Jeep has another important vehicle here from FCA. This is the kind of vehicle in the segment that could really print money for FCA. You know, they haven't really had anything here, like, at the top end since the Chrysler Aspen. I mean, you can debate where the Durango fits, because it's certainly expensive, especially with that Hellcat engine. But from more of a luxury perspective, which is what I think you would argue the Grand Wagoneer is, this isn't going to be like a basic Jeep. This is going to be a loaded Jeep, which is historically what the Grand Wagoneer has always been. You know, it's, I think many automotive historians, and I think we were talking about this in Slack the other day, would consider the Grand Wagoneer to be like the first luxury SUV. I think that's debatable, but it's definitely among them. And I mean, we don't know a whole lot more based on this. We expect it's going to be built in Warren, suburban Detroit, which is where they build the 1500, which makes sense given its size, if you will. And I am very excited about this. I think it's great they're bringing back this name. I think that's going to play well. I think it still has a lot of brand equity. Yeah, I'll leave it there with that terrible pun.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, I'm actually super excited for the Grand Wagoneer, too. You know, ever since I saw one of these for the first time that I can remember, I was always, you know, drawn to that old body style from the original Grand Wagoneer. You know, the wood veneer on the side. You know, it looked premium, like a premium Jeep. And that was, you know, not something that I would expect. And, you know, we've seen values definitely have gone, like, way up in the past, I don't know how many years now, that it's been trending upwards. But at this point, they're actually getting somewhat expensive if you want a really nice one out there. So I think that, you know, Jeep is really striking when the iron is hot here. And, you know, there are people who, you know, are excited for this nameplate to return. And, you know, I'm certainly, you know, one of those people who feels that that nostalgic pull to the old one. And, you know, just like you said, I expect this one to be, you know, extremely luxurious. You know, it's going to compete, maybe not like a direct Navigator Escalade competitor, but definitely, you know, in that vein, and that, you know, the priority is luxury and not necessarily off-road. You know, if you still want a Jeep that, you know, has that maybe like off-road and luxury combined, you know, maybe like a Grand Cherokee is more your style. But no, this is probably more like Tahoe-esque that we're gonna see here. So, you know, big SUVs, they sell like crazy. You know, GM has, I think, 2/3 of the market share of that right now, and Ford has close to the other third, and everybody else is just kind of like trailing behind. I feel like people could get excited about seeing a Jeep here, because, you know, even if it's not, you know, a super capable off-roader, people still get behind that brand. And, you know, it's something that's desirable. And if they can pull the design off and make it, you know, unique in that, you know, SUV, like full-size SUV world, I think that they'll definitely have a winner.
It's interesting you talk about the classic values rising over time. I mean, just looking at some listings here on Hemmings, 1985, it's in mint condition with 26,000 miles.
Wow.
But it's going for $63,700. So that's not cheap. I mean, all of these are in the 60s. You know, you get another, you know, even just this like 1986 one is going for $33,000. It's got some miles on it too. So it's like, I mean, these have quickly, I think, become classics. You know, they've always had, you know, I think a little bit of that, you know, maybe that like old money cachet, if you will, in recent years. You'd almost see them at like summer spots or vacation spots where like you could tell people were maybe driving them like around wherever just for the summer. But I mean, now they're like full on, they're not just like luxury items anymore, or like, you know, I don't know, trendy items. They're like legit, I think, collector's cars. And I think that's great. It's weird too. I mean, you grew up in Michigan too, Zach. They're not uncommon around Metro Detroit. Like you'll even see like beat up ones. And that's where I think it's a little weird for us, because it's taken me a while to sort of get to the idea that the Grand Wagoneer is this like, you know, luxury thing. Whereas it's like, yeah, it's not that odd to see one on a used car lot, or to see one for sale, or just to see your neighbor have a rusty one or something, you know. You know, such as the bubble that is Metro Detroit, I guess. But I mean, you know, for me though, that all just kind of builds into like what the Grand Wagoneer is. I would love to see them do a concept, you know, maybe at like the SEMA show with wood panels or something. I don't know what the practical applications of that would be. And even the target market would probably be like, why are there wood panels on your car? Is it a boat? You know, like, but I don't know. I mean, there's many elements of this that I think are really cool. And it's a timeless, you know, timeless like nameplate. So, I mean, when you look at the, like the names that we're sort of getting back you know, Bronco, Grand Wagoneer, Trailblazer, maybe not back in the way people would think, but Blazer. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like the Maverick might be coming back. So, I mean, there's some great names out there, and it's cool to, you know, see them back on the road again. I mean, that's another random stream of conscious thought here.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get every single time I see, you know, some Mint or even, you know, not a Mint Grand Wagoneer rolling down the road, I get super excited. Like the last time I remember seeing a nice one, I was at a boat show, and this old couple were pulling their super fancy sailboat with an absolutely perfect Grand Wagoneer. You know, I just stood around and chatted with them for a while. They love their car, and they said they're never selling it. You know, they see the recent uptick in value, and you know, that's part of the reason why the values are going up like this. And I can see Jeep hopping on that bandwagon, being like, hey, this name is desirable again. People love our cars. Let's bring it back.
Little side note here, they sort of just reiterated, if you will, that there's going to be a plug-in Wrangler. That's no secret. We've literally already seen it. I believe it's CES.
Yes.
Which was a while ago. Believe it or not, it was this year. I was going to say that was a year ago, but no, that was 2020, January 2020. What a different time.
A very different 2020.
right. That was more like the end of 2019, I guess, with a normal car show. Man, SEMA would be, I would not be, or not SEMA, CES is what I'm trying to say. Going to a convention center for a car show with all of the people. You know, I've been to SEMA multiple times. That would make me a little nervous right now. I'm not going to lie. I think I would need, like, I wouldn't do it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, I digress.
We didn't realize it back then, but, you know, it was spreading freely throughout China while while CES was going on. It was going about the ranks, and I don't know. So
yeah. I mean, think about the Chicago Auto Show, to go off tracks here, which we were both at. Everybody was sick at it.
That was February.
February. And in hindsight, it's like, well, wait a minute.
Yep.
You know, and it's, you listen to, or you look at some new information, and they're like, well, it, you know, coronavirus may have been here as early as December, according to some estimates I've read. So who knows? All I can say is that there was an auto show in January that was still like olden times and normal, and that there was a plug-in Wrangler there. And I think what's kind of cool about that, though, to go back to the Ford Jeep rivalry, is like, this is like sort of the counterpunch to Bronco, if you will, if they could play it upright, because right now there is nothing hotter than the Bronco. You know, it's got the looks, it's got the engine lineup is very compelling. It looks like it's going to be as capable as the Wrangler off-road. Well, how do you maybe counterpunch that? Well, bust out a plug-in like Wrangler? Well, wait a minute. Suddenly, yeah, the Bronco's cool. It's over here. But if you're telling me I can have a Wrangler and it's a plug-in, oh, hold on, you know? So I think this is a very savvy play. And I, you know, all the uses you can do with electric off-roading, I think are also, that's really cool, I think.
No, I totally agree. And I think it, you know, our green editor, John Snyder, went from being a Bronco fan to swinging his allegiances back to the Wrangler. He declared in Slack yesterday. So, and, you know, I don't blame him either. I mean, that's awesome that you're going to be able to get a Wrangler that has, you know, some number of electric range. That thing gets horrible fuel economy. The Bronco gets horrible fuel economy. Well, we don't know it, but we know it's going to get horrible fuel economy. And yeah, here you are with something that is efficient that the Bronco doesn't have at all. There's no hybrid, no plug-in hybrid, nothing that we know of on the horizon right now. So huge, huge win from Jeep there. And, they got that 392 apparently coming too for the Wrangler. That thing's going to be nuts.
That's going to be wild. I think that's really going to make it, I don't know. I don't see what's weird for me. 392 and a Wrangler isn't something I really need. I don't need the hot rod Wrangler. Some people like that, but that's not my thing. Give me a really good Pentastar. I actually really thought that the Turbo 4 was kind of neat too. That was a different vibe. I don't know. I like, there's certain things I like a ton of power in. Jeeps are not one of them. To me, Jeeps are something else. Make it nice and capable for when, you know, like I would be driving it on road most of the time, where there's plenty of juice, but that's all I need. Just enough, nothing more. You know, I don't know. The Pentastar, what it's rated at right now, what is it, 285 or something?
Around that, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if it had a little more under the hood of the Wrangler, but, you know, still feels about right.
I don't think anybody needs the 392 in a Wrangler. I think it's it's probably gross excess, but it's going to be fun to drive, probably.
So let me throw this back at you. Your favorite V8 from FCA. You know, you've got, you know, a number of engines. Mine would actually be the 392. I really just like how raw and like the way it sounds. And it's just like, I mean, to me, that's great. It does everything I want it to. I don't need the Hellcat crazy power. I don't need the Demon crazy power. But yeah, man, if you said, Greg, what do you want? I'd take the 392, which actually you could get into in like a Charger or a Challenger. Gosh, I forgot what they call those cars.
Scat Pack.
Yes. Scat Pack. I mean, those are like low 40s. You get like literally, in my opinion, their best engine. So, I mean, your take.
I am actually in 100% agreement with you. I think the best Charger Challenger you can get is the Scat Pack wide body. And yes, just that. Mm. The 6.4 liter, 392, I think it's the correct amount of power. You know, you can still spin the tires like crazy. The thing's still stupid fast. It's totally drivable on the road. Not to say the Hellcat isn't still extremely drivable, but I think the Scat Pack is just that super, super happy medium where it should be. And, you know, that is 100% my favorite V8 configuration. And like you said, it's also affordable. You know, you can get into one in the 40s, whereas if you get a Hellcat, well, you're looking much more expensive than that.
Cool. Speaking of expensive cars, BMW M8. We keep seeing these things spied. Kind of crazy. We've reported on actually different narratives, which is cool. I love it when the plot sort of thickens. What are you seeing here as the latest?
Yeah, so the original spy shots here, you know, we saw these, you know, air inlets on the side rear windows where, you know, theoretically, hey, maybe they need air in there because it's a mid-engine prototype. That was like the working theory, the long shot. Hey, maybe BMW's developing a mid-engine supercar of some sort to replace the i8. But we just heard today, actually, that a German publication contacted BMW about this, and BMW weirdly told them that, hey, there's nothing going on here. This is just some development car for suspension and brakes, and that this isn't a mid-engine prototype. Now, take of that what you will. You know, obviously, BMW could be covering for something, theoretically, if they want it to be tricky. Or it could be exactly what they say it is. It could be really nothing. They're just testing some random parts on this mule of a car. So, yeah, it's a mystery. The plot is thickened officially at this point. Yeah, I really have no idea what to make of it. It could be either way at this point.
Yeah, it's a little wild, and that's okay. I think spy shots are great for things like this. You know, hey, we're going to get an M8 in the fleet in pretty soon. So, I mean,
we are.
That's, you know, hey, maybe we can somehow dissect the car and figure this out. I don't know. It's a cool mystery. We can leave it there. Another kind of quick hit. Delage is back. I think this is great. It's going to be very limited edition. The pictures, these are among the best press shots I've seen in a while, as far as just like, you know, the way the sun's hitting them. I mean, this almost looks like CGI, let me put it that way. But it's pretty cool. Delage, if you're not familiar, is one of the older names in the car industry. It goes back many, many years. The only reason you would know about it now, frankly, is because Delages generally are very strong contenders for best in show at Pebble Beach. You know, they're up there with like Delahaye, which according to Wikipedia acquired them in 1935. Voisin, another French car company that built aircraft engines in World War I. But I mean, these are like, if you're talking about like competitive set, That's who normally you benchmark Delages against. They're even so old, they're sort of like pre-runners to like when Packard was really in its heyday and things like that. Bugatti, Bentley, like this is a really old brand. But they had some great success racing around the turn of the last century, if you will. They're beautiful cars. I mean, cars from like 100 plus years ago are not everybody's sort of cup of tea. You know, maybe 30, 40 years ago when these cars weren't quite so in the past, I think there were more people were into them. You know, you would just at least get the idea of what a car from this era looked like from like Monopoly or something. But now these cars are so old that to me, like, I mean, this is really a dusty chapter of history. Like everything else from like 1915 really is, as far as like, you know, trying to relate to like, you know, transportation, things like that. But, you know, again, limited edition. They're not going to make that many of these. They're going to be expensive. They're going to go for some records with them because they're purportedly going to be very fast. Story is on our site. You got to check it out. But we were talking at the start of the show about how cool these old ones are to see at Concours. So I think it's great to have the name out there.
No, I think it's really cool. You know, this one struck me as like completely random out of the blue. Like Delage, that is a name that I did not expect to see really ever again as far as new car news is concerned. I figured, you know, that was stuck way, way back in the 20th century. But no, like that was actually a pretty interesting point you came up with there, Greg, about, you know, like these were the competitors for the Delage, and it made me think, like, could you imagine like a Delage versus a Bentley versus a Bugatti and Maserati comparison test back in the days?
Yeah,
that would just be hilarious. But no, now we see them rolling across the lawns at various concours shows, and it's always incredible when I see something that says Delage on it, and now it's like, oh, there's going to be a new one, and it's going to be supposedly the closest thing to an F1 car experience as you can get on the road. We'll see about that. A lot of people are doing that. Obviously, the Mercedes Project 1, Aston Martin Valkyrie. There are so many of these super, super low production hypercars that seem to all be, you know, in this state of development right now. That, hey, maybe we'll see it in a few years. So add Delage to your list of, you know, it's crazy expensive. $2.3 million each, supposedly, is the price. That's actually cheaper than the Gordon Murray car that the T50 that just came out. That thing is over $3 million. So, hey, maybe the Delage is a bargain here, comparatively.
Could be. It sounds like it's going to be crazy fast. Lots of carbon fiber. Really wild, like, backstory here of, like, these investors. Like, if you read the story we have on site, four of these guys are billionaires, and he's looking for more investors, which just goes to show you that car building is not cheap. So we'll see. Hopefully this, I will say this, part of me is a little cynical. Not part of me, I'm a little cynical. You know, do I think we're going to get a long-term Delage? Probably not. Do I think we're even going to get to, you know, go to a reveal for a Delage? Well, I don't know. But this is cool. And this is, you know, this is where, you know, this is like a car that you would see at the Geneva Motor Show. You know, they would reveal it like the night before at some offsite. They make a big deal out of it. They'd invite the media, but the real reason they'd be doing it is to drum up investors and like clients. You know, I don't know. Stuff like this excites me just because I like history. I like fast cars, obviously. And I like when you see somebody who has a vision of like, hey, let's make this amazing thing, even though it's going to be so low. It's still like, it adds to sort of like the spectrum, if you will, of like, hey, here's another supercar or hypercar, you know. So that's it. That is the Delage. I think we've really brought that back up more than it probably needs to be brought up. Lincoln Navigator, that's the present day. You've been driving one of those. What do you think?
Indeed. It's been a pretty trucky podcast so far. We talked Grand Wagoneer. Now I'll talk Lincoln Navigator, which, you know, theoretically could be competitors in the somewhat near future. No, this was actually my first time driving the totally redesigned and new Navigator that everybody waxes so eloquently about. I've seen so many positive reviews. And no, I can say without a doubt, it is like the most luxurious truck I have ever driven. And I really do mean truck too, because, you know, despite there being layers upon layers of luxury and leather and chrome and everything, you know, this thing still, you know, feels like a truck underneath. You know, you feel it, you know, in the somewhat slow steering, the way it, you know, lightly and, you know, rather not so lightly crashes over bumps. You know, it's doesn't necessarily have that small air of refinement that you get in like a BMW X7 or a Mercedes-Benz GLS. Now, you can tell that there's an F-150 chassis underneath you, but at the same time, it's obviously far more comfortable than an F-150, independent rear suspension, adaptive shocks, all of the good tricks that Lincoln can use to make this thing, you know, feel like a luxury car. Mine that I had was the reserve trim. That's actually mid-level. It's not the uber fancy black label. That one will crest over $100,000 real quick. Mine was only $92,000. So pretty cheap. However, it did have a few options on it. Had the special 30-way perfect position seats, Revel audio. I think, you know, it might take you a little while, but I think, you know, you can pretty much find the perfect position in those seats if you have the afternoon to mess with the 18 different buttons on the door, along with the massage. There's just so many different configurations you can go there. As well, my car also had the monochromatic package, which was new last year. Lincoln actually expanded it to a bunch of its models this year. It takes away a lot of the chrome, which I think, you know, we really associate chrome and flashiness with the Lincoln brand, but this deletes a lot of it. Throw a lot of black trim on there. That's a bit of a trend in the automotive industry where you replace all the chrome with, you know, black painted. But this also has a body painted grill, which is pretty different. I don't remember the last time that I've seen a grill on a car that was actually painted the same color as the car itself. I think it looks pretty unique and pretty interesting. Really makes it stand out from other Navigators or just other luxury vehicles in general. The interior, mine was like a fully, like a very luxurious looking gray. And I honestly think that it can hang with the best of all these luxury car interiors. You know, you look at a BMW X7, as long as you don't like deck it completely out and make it cost like $120,000-$130,000, you're not really taking a step down in the Lincoln at all. And you know, the Lincoln is arguably the cheaper vehicle too. You know, driving it is also fairly luxurious. This thing has the Raptor engine. So 450 horsepower, 510 pound-feet of torque. It goes. It's faster than I thought this big truck would feel. You don't really necessarily, you know, feel it at the seat of the pants, but you watch that speedometer go up, and man, it flies on up there faster than I would expect it to. There's a nice little growl you hear in the cabin. If you roll the windows down, you actually get a bit of turbo whooshing, which I think is kind of funny in a big luxurious car like that. No, this is, I think it's been like 2 or 3 years now since they've launched this new Navigator, and obviously Cadillac just revealed their new Escalade. What's it been, like 6 or 7 months now since the reveal of that? So I think that Escalade puts the Lincoln back on its heels a little bit. We obviously haven't driven that one yet. I think that even with, you know, all the fancy screens of that new Escalade and all the new tech that they have in there, I think that the Navigator is still, you know, extremely competitive, especially with that engine. I really think that 3.5 liter EcoBoost that they have in there sets it apart from many others. When you have that much power, makes somebody like myself and probably like you like it just a little bit more. So
yeah, that's a good analysis. I think I I'm intrigued. You'll have to share some of those pictures on that grill, because that's, you don't see that too much anymore. That was more of a, like, that was a thing. It's just, you know, body colored grills and other pieces have sort of popped in and out for different eras. That's a little random, but I mean, really, for me, the Navigator is all about the interior. It's just gorgeous in there. You know, depending on the package you go with, it really just, I mean, it's got that mid-century modern kind of vibe, which is amazing. I've always thought that was really beautiful. It also, you know, there's a number of different, like, just, you know, trims you could go with that give it a very sleek look. Some of the wood trims are, you know, really attractive. It's, you know, just the interior is great. I really can't say enough about that. And that to me is where the Navigator is tough to beat when you're benchmarking it against, you know, like the Escalade. I've always thought the Navigator was better than the Escalade as far as interior. I have not been in the new Escalade. Most of us haven't. I hear it is a very competitive vehicle. General Motors interiors, especially Cadillacs, have been kind of scattershot. Sometimes they're really expensive looking, sometimes they're not, sometimes they're expensive but they don't look expensive. I feel like their interiors have been a little erratic and frankly haven't matched the looks of the exteriors of the Cadillacs, which I think have been gorgeous for the last 10 years or so. Very aggressive, you know, intense cars especially, but the Escalade too. So, yeah, I mean, 10-speed automatic in the Navigator, which the last time I drove one, that worked pretty well with it. It's a nicely, you know, the suspension is tuned very well, I think, as far as getting that right vibe. And it'll be interesting, too. You mentioned the Grand Wagoneer. Like, how are they going to price that? We know it's not going to be cheap, but is there a way they could maybe sort of slip in there and maybe slightly undercut the Navigator for a more basic Grand Wagoneer? I don't know. I mean, maybe you're trying to do too much at that point. Maybe you just make it expensive and it is what it is, and it's expensive and you get it because it's expensive. Like, that's for sure a legit marketing strategy. But on the other hand, Jeeps, well, Jeeps do add up. Jeeps are expensive. They are oftentimes less than Lincolns and like pure luxury brands. So maybe there's an option to get in there. I don't know. I know Cadillac tried to do that with the CT6. You know, they didn't want to make it go head-to-head with the 7 Series, but they also, it was like this in-between car, and I feel like that caused issues for them, to give another example of where you want to be very clear what segment you're playing in, because that was a large car that could be expensive depending on what you got on it, or you could actually get one for, you know, more like 5 Series money. So, I mean, I don't know, going off on a tangent here. I mean, Jeep needs to pick a lane and be in it. And maybe part of that lane is near sideswiping the Navigator. I don't know.
It could be. I mean, I almost see them like starting out at a price similar to, say, like a GMC Yukon, since it's that mm-hmm. sort of like off-roady vibe yep. to it. And then, you know, eventually the higher trims probably eking into Navigator, Escalade, and I don't know, Yukon Denali territory as well, since those are so expensive. So, but yeah, nice. No, it's a big truck, and I absolutely understand why people, you know, are really gravitate towards these, you know, big body on frame SUVs, even if you can get that, you know, if the X7 and the Mercedes and some of the others are maybe a little, ride a little bit better, a little more comfortable, you know, quieter and whatnot, you know, it's there's still a lot to be had and is desirable in the Lincoln.
It's a good looking grill too. You just slacked that to me, showed me the picture.
Indeed.
I wouldn't think I would like it, you know, the way you describe it, but yeah, it just works.
It does. It's really cool. You have like a million of the little Lincoln shaped badges all there, you know, etched in, and it's a see-through grill too. So you just, there's a bunch of tiny little body painted holes. Neat.
So speaking of expensive, we've talked luxury, we've talked you know, historic brands, Mercedes. You spent some time in an AMG, which is always a good thing to do. You were specifically in the C63 S, which gives you a little bit more power and some more things. Coupe, What did you do with that car? I really like the C63 coupe.
Yeah, me too. This is, you know, in my head, this was always, you know, the Mercedes AMG to get. You know, it's the smallest one. It's two doors. It's the S, so it has the most powerful engine. And it also, to me, looks better than everything else. That two-door body style, it just really, really speaks to me. I don't really need four doors. I'm still a young guy without kids. It's sort of the correct Mercedes size and performance for me. Now, having said that, you know, it was not exactly how I envisioned it to be. So most AMGs, honestly, that I've driven have been 4MATIC all-wheel drive, you know, and they're all, you know, fairly, you know, they're pretty crazy in that they're very, very fast, but they're not always rear-wheel drive. Now, the C63S, that thing's all-wheel drive. Sorry, it's rear-wheel drive, and it is a bit of a thrill ride. Now, it accelerates, like, banshee. Like this thing, it almost has, it doesn't almost have, it has more power than the rear wheels can handle. Now you put the throttle down and you get a whole lot of spinning up from those rear tires. And those rear tires are also Michelin Pilot Sport Cup 2s. So pretty much the grippiest thing that you can put on a new car these days, Mercedes has on this thing. But no, almost, you know, like a Charger or a Challenger, Scat Pack or Hellcat, you mat the throttle in this thing, and well, it doesn't necessarily want to go right away. You have to get up, you know, you're going about 20, 25 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden, boom, it takes off, it hooks, and it goes. Mercedes, you know, they have a 3.7 second 0 to 60 time quoted on this thing. There's a little track pace app in the car itself where you can time 0 to 60 times. I did that. And the best I was able to do is 4.4 seconds. Now, obviously, I
got to work on that, man.
Yeah, I know. Like the, I guess my launch control computer activated everything wasn't, you know, my technique wasn't correct. But no, like it, that was obviously with launch control and all that. But no, like you just need the perfect conditions to get this thing to actually, you know, give you that real-world performance because, well, everywhere you go, it's just hanging the tail out, sliding about, especially if you turn traction control off, which, well, is a bit hair-raising because it's very, very tail-happy. No, once it does hook, thing's a great train. The 9-speed multi-clutch transmission, super, super fast shifting. I love the paddles. It reacts right away. It's not Porsche PDK fast, but it is just one small step behind it. Handling, grip-tastic. It's one way I could describe it. There's just so much lateral grip, but at the same time, it feels heavy, and the car is pretty heavy. It's 4,134 pounds. I looked that up after taking it out to some of my favorite roads where I test the handling on most cars, and I was like, this thing feels sort of heavy, and wow, it's a good bit over 4,000 pounds, which is, you know, way, way more than an M4. You look at the current BMW M4, it weighs about 3,600 pounds, and so this thing, yeah, it's pretty heavy for, you know, the small coupe style that it is. It's even heavier than an RS5 too, but no, you understand where that is because it's a Mercedes. And luxury is first, luxury is key. So obviously the interior, you know, pretty typical Mercedes AMG. You have carbon fiber everywhere, leather everywhere, screens galore, pretty much everything you'd expect in a Mercedes of its stature and cost, which is something I haven't mentioned yet, which absolutely should get mentioned because it's $104,000 my tester was, which for a compact coupe performance car is pretty bonkers. It starts, I believe, in the 70-ish range, 70 to 80, but this thing had a ton of options on it. And honestly, for that money, I almost feel like I'm reaching into E63S range, where you get the 603 horsepower engine version of this 4-liter twin turbo V8. But this thing is not cheap for what it is, especially compared to the competition, say an Audi RS5 or that BMW M4 that I mentioned that's a bit lighter. As a whole, this thing, like my takeaway after a week with it, it sort of feels like the German version of a Hellcat or Scat Pack, in that, you know, it's not necessarily like this super dialed in track machine. It sort of feels like, you know, they had that same ethos and that this thing is just going to be, you know, a bit unwieldy and nuts to drive. But it's been, you know, civilized, it's gone to Mercedes finishing school, and, you know, it's just made luxurious on top of, being, well, an absolute hoot to drive fast. Really, it's hard to drive this thing, you don't want to drive it slow, because it's just, you try and scoop between lanes and traffic, and it's like, oh man, there goes the rear end. And it's a lot of fun, though, as one would expect. Sort of feels like an old school AMG, where it's like, hey, we're gonna take this small sedan or coupe that Mercedes built and just like shove a giant V8 in it, and here you go. So in that way, you know, it's an extremely fun car to drive. And if you're looking maybe for a track car, though, I would probably edge more towards the BMW than this thing. So.
It's interesting. You gave me a lot to kind of chew on there.
Yeah.
the one takeaway that I think that I agree with completely is the way Mercedes, the way the AMG cars are sort of like the German Hellcats. We've discussed things about this for a while, I think, on the podcast and obviously in the pages of Autoblog. Your predecessor, former road test editor Reese Counts, who's a big AMG guy, big Mercedes guy, he had a similar take, because I remember thinking, wow, you know, it's not like the most obvious one, but then when somebody says it, you're like, oh yeah, of course. Now, I would never compare the levels of sophistication of like a Mercedes versus like a Dodge, but when you really talk about just that brash, in-your-face dynamic, AMG really captures that. Now, they do a nice job of dialing in their cars, making them have a more sophisticated technical feel that you don't even want, I think, in a Dodge or even a Chrysler. But I'm impressed, you know, and I think that's, it really gives them, I don't know, it gives it this, like, in some ways, I think, a broader appeal that you get from Mercedes, because you truly get that Mercedes halo. You know, whenever you get into an AMG car, I'm always impressed with the fact that they feel very luxurious. You know, they continue that, like, that feel, that expectation of, you know, having almost everything. You know, they like to say the best or nothing, which is an unbelievably arrogant statement. But, I mean, they do put that into their, like, the interiors, the craftsmanship. But then they somehow translate or, like, almost pause that and then, like, still have these dynamics, these engines that, like, can, like, just rip your head off with this, like, visceral experience that I think is so cool. So that's an interesting takeaway. I think it's kind of neat that you and I had that same observation, as well as Reese, from the vibe.
Yeah, I guess it's not that that controversial of a take, but no, that's absolutely the vibe that the car gave me all week long. It's not as loud as Hellcats. That's one thing that Mercedes AMG could work on. The exhaust is good, but man, those Hellcats will wake everybody around you in the whole town up.
indeed, they're like right up there with like Jaguar SVR territory as far as like loud noises. You know, they're the barky dogs of the car world. I will also say this. I'd like to hear what you think about this too, because you have spent more time behind the wheel of your AMG than I have of mine. I have a GLC 43 AMG parked in front of my house. This is 385 horsepower, if I'm remembering right. Yes, I am. And at 6,100 RPM, hooked up to a 9-speed AMG TCT automatic, as I read the specs here. It's a twin turbo, bi-turbo, whatever you want to call it, 3-liter V6. That's a lot of power. That's a brilliant engine. And we've talked about this for a while now. there's a number of flavors of AMG right now. To me, for a while, it took me like some time to wrap my head around an AMG that didn't have 6.3 on the front quarter panels. That to me was like, you know, you paid for that. It was expensive. It was powerful. It was that like iconic, like Yankee pinstripes or something, you know, that to me for a while, and obviously AMG's had a lot of engines over its long history, but that was synonymous. And then in the last 5-6 years, they've brought out some different engines, like really proliferated to the point where like, it's not just like AMG is like the thing. It's like AMG is this, and then there's like also this, and then there's also like the S models. Like they're starting to dice it up in a way that other brands are copying because there's a lot of money to be made. You know, if you put AMG on your car, I think that makes people more excited. I am more excited to drive this, you know, 385 horsepower, you know, SUV crossover than if it didn't say AMG on it. But I wouldn't consider this thing a real AMG. On the other hand, what the hell is a real AMG anymore? Does that even matter? I would say what you drove is definitely closer to a real AMG. That being said, you could get the E-Class with 100 more horsepower, and that's even more of a real AMG. So I'm not really taking a side in this other than, I like my 6.3 liters, if you will, which really were 6.2, which kind of goes to show you that like, sometimes the myth is more than the actual reality, which is a long way of saying that it's probably okay that there's a bunch of different outputs for different AMG segments. But what's your take on that?
I really like what Mercedes has done with the top two levels of AMG, the 53 and the 63s. My favorite right now is actually the 53s because they all have Mercedes' new 3-liter turbocharged inline six engine with the electric boost. And I think that is like the perfect middle ground for a sporty daily driver that doesn't cost as much as the 63. I'm also a huge fan of 3-liter inline sixes. Probably, you know, one of my favorite engine configurations, just the smoothness of the powertrain, the sound that this thing makes. I actually think it sounds better than BMW's inline six. And it has a ton of power. I believe that they're all sitting around 424-ish horsepower right now with that engine. So even more than that GLC 43 that you have in your driveway right now. I think that, like you said, it's a very, very smart business decision just because, you know, people love AMGs. You know, if that GLC 43 was instead named a GLC 450 and it had a sport handling package on it with AMG wheels or something like that, it just wouldn't be as desirable. But somebody is like, oh, here I am with my Mercedes AMG GLC 43. And, well, it feels a lot, more upper class of a vehicle. Feels like a more cohesive performance product. You know, they throw that Pan Americana grill on literally everything these days. Which,
yeah, I like that grill, actually.
Me too. I mean, I will complain sometimes when, like, they make, like, weird styling choices just, oh, because people will buy this. But in this case, hey, the grill looks awesome. And, you know, the car itself, the GLC 43, I'm sure it's fast. And I'm sure, you know, it does things that an AMG Lite probably should feel like. So, heck yeah, throw the grill on there, please. Because it looks sporty and, you know, people are drawn to that. I mean, we see BMW M Sport, Cadillac V is now Cadillac V and V Blackwing. Everybody is going with these, you know, steps of performance, you know, and they're copying AMG because it works. So, yeah, I'm all for more of these, you know, 43, 53, and obviously the 63 should never go away. But, you know, when they throw that AMG badge on there, I feel like, you know, they're sort of forced to step back and make it, you know, an all-around performance package. You know, as opposed to, you know, just throwing a big engine in there and calling it a day. No, the 43 has better brakes. It has better suspension. It has different seats in there. It has all of these different things that, you know, makes the car more desirable, more fun to drive. And, yeah, just keep doing it because the cars rock.
And you can also, I would guarantee you that GL, like that AMG, if you will, badging is worth $10,000, $5,000. I mean, like you said, if you call it a 450 with a performance pack and like an AMG appearance pack, whatever. If you say it's an AMG, boom. I mean, people will pay for that. And I think also from an image perspective, people don't hear the 43 part, you know, especially like if you're not a car person, you just hear like, oh, a Mercedes AMG. I remember that's a cool car. That's a big deal. And you stop there. So, you know, there's trade-offs. You know, I'd say the marketing department is kind of winning over maybe the car people on this one, but these are legit vehicles, legit in all the ways that you laid out. So, another thought there, that inline six is brilliant. That is the sweet spot. It's the 392 that we were talking about, you know, 45 minutes ago on the show that, like, it's not the most powerful, but it's like, it does everything you want it to do. And to go back even to like old school, inline six engines are not super common anymore. So that to me is an awesome, like, car guy talking point when you're like, you know, done with driving for the day and you're having a drink somewhere. That's cool. When you're like, yeah, my car is an inline six. Okay. Tell me about that, you know?
Yeah, so. No, I'm super excited about Mazda bringing back an inline six. You know,
yes.
There's going to be one of those in the next Mazda 6 or whatever they want to call it. Please do bring back that awesome, awesome engine configuration because, yeah, it's one of the most enjoyable to drive for enthusiasts. We all love it. You love it. I mean, it's somehow won over the 4-liter twin turbo V8 for me as the AMG that I want and desire. It's just that stupid good. So I'll leave it at that.
Sounds good. Let's spend some money. We don't have any actual money to spend this week, but for the segment, we have a nice update from, it's either Ivor or Ivor. I apologize. He sent us an update, which is great. And this was from episode 637. This is a really nice email. This gentleman had moved to the UK, was going to look to relocate to New York before this coronavirus thing happened, originally from South Africa, and was looking for a car. Had a great list of ones. His budget was about £4,000, no more than $90,000. He was looking at Ford Focuses, Focai, Qashqais, Kia Souls, and then kind of elaborated that the tax sort of car taxes in the UK are tricky. So this is what he ended up doing. He ended up buying and financing a 2015 Kia Soul with the 1.6-liter CRDI MI mix. I'm not sure what engine that is. That sounds like a diesel to
me. Sure sounds like a diesel to me, too.
Sure sounds like a diesel. So that's cool. Had $43,000 and still had the factory warranty. So that sounds like a really good buy to me. Had a bunch of the tech gizmos on it, which is always good to hear. I've always found Kias and Hyundais to be pretty loaded up, so that's cool. We like the Soul. It won our crossover comparison test last year, so you know we obviously support your decision there. This one's the 15, which is, you know, if anything, I think that model had kind of cooler styling. I feel like they've toned it down a little bit. Some other notes here. The 1 Series was too small for him. His wife didn't like the Skoda. C3 Picasso is great. And the Swift was definitely too small. He may make it to New York at some point next year. So, hey, we hope you do. And safe travels for that. Any thoughts on this, Zach? You might have had a chance to jump in on this podcast. Kia Soul work for you?
Hey, I will always support a Kia Soul purchase. Those things are way more fun than a lot of people give them credit for to drive. I didn't drive the generation that he bought, but I know, you know, from driving the new one, it sort of carries over that fun to drive nature. They're super, super practical, that big old hatchback back there. And, you know, they're with that diesel engine, I'm sure it's plenty peppy around town and can toss it around corners on the weekend when you go out to the country or whatever. It's a good little compact car. So I fully support the buying decision of the Kia Soul.
All right, Ivor, you not only got the original take on this, you also got reinforced with your decision from Zach. So thanks for that. Thanks for writing. This has been a fun show. Thanks for the update there, Ivor. Send us your spend my monies. We need to spend some more people's money. We'd love to spend any sort of bonus checks you're getting or something. So please send those our way. Be safe out there. We'll see you next week.